Chapter 10, Rebuilding Indian Territory. Chapter Preview, Terms, Tenant Farmer, Light Horseman, Seminary, Segregation, Railhead, Drover, Quarantine, Royalty, Strike, Jurisdiction. People: John F. Brown, Cyrus Harris, Samuel Chakota, William Ross, Jesse Chisholm, James J. McAllister, Isaac Parker. Places: East Shawnee Trail, Chisholm Trail, No Man's Land, McAllister. It is a curious speculation to know what will be the future of these nations, a New York Times newspaper reporter wrote in 1863 about the Indian Territory. Most of the people in the territory were facing the daunting, disheartening job of rebuilding their lives for the second time in 30 years. The traumatic events of the earlier removals and relocations were added to by the current loss of people, land, and homes. Section 1. The Five Nations Start Over. As you read, look for the steps taken by the five nations after the Civil War. Vocabulary terms: tenant farmer, light horseman, seminary, and segregation. As difficult as the job of rebuilding was, each Indian nation set about restoring their burned houses, neglected fields, abandoned schools, destroyed towns, and crushed lives. Slow but steady progress was made. Days turned into weeks, and weeks turned into months and years as the healing continued. The spirit of the people proved stronger than the circumstances with which they had to deal. Seminole. The divided loyalties of the Seminole continued in the Reconstruction years. The pro-Union John Chupko and town chief Billy Bowlegs had joined Opothleyahola in Kansas. John Jumper led those who supported the Southern cause. The federal government commissioned Elijah Brown to return the Seminole who had fled during the Civil War to their land in Indian Territory. The government recognized John Chupko as chief, but the tribe soon elected John Jumper to lead them. Jumper resigned in 1877 to devote time to the Spring Baptist Church. His son-in-law, John F. Brown, was elected chief. In spite of the differences, the Seminole organized a national council with delegates from the 14 bands or towns, including two bands for blacks. A trading post was established at Wewaka in 1866, and a post office was added in 1867. Wewaka was chosen as the capital of the Seminole Nation, and a council house and capitol building were soon built. In 1869, the population of the Seminole in the Indian Territory, including freedmen, was 2,105. Under Brown's leadership, the Seminole began to enjoy peace and prosperity. It was reported that there were over 10,000 fence rails, 120,000 bushels of corn, 2,000 horses, 4,000 cattle, and 8,000 swine. A new Seminole tribal school, Ramsey Mission, was soon opened near Wewaka, and a school for girls was established in 1880 near Sesaka. Another boys' school, Miccosukee Mission, was built in 1892 near Seminole. A year later, the Sesaka school was merged with a new girls' boarding school called Emahaka Mission. Chickasaw. Cyrus Harris led the Chickasaw tribe as its first governor in 1856, an office he also held from 1860 to 1862 and from 1872 to 1874. Dougherty Colbert, Horace Pratt, and Jackson Kemp served terms as tribal governor during the early years of Reconstruction. The Chickasaw very quickly turned their attention to reestablishing their schools and to caring for the large number of orphans. The first superintendent of public instruction and office created in 1867 was G.D. James. 12 neighborhood schools opened in 1869. The earlier Chickasaw Academies were repaired and reopened as national boarding schools in 1876. Orphans were housed and cared for at the old Birney Institute, which became known as the Chickasaw Orphan School near Lebanon, Marshall County. Teachers were paid $3 a month for each student in attendance, but they had to buy supplies and books with part of their salary. Families received $7.50 a child to pay for boarding near the school if they lived further than 2.5 miles away. Classes were taught in English, which forced the students to first learn English before other subjects, such as spelling, reading, and arithmetic, could be studied. Additional subjects taught depended on the ability of the teacher, but they usually included grammar, geography, history, and physiology. Advanced students were sent to schools in other states. The Chickasaw philosophy towards education was summed up later by a citizen who said, "We must educate or we must perish." Choctaw. In November 1866, Choctaw Chief Allen Wright said, quote, "Our people have suffered enough for the last few years past. Now let each one study to restore peace, harmony, and good order, which were lost amidst confusion and war. No lawful means shall be spared me to study to effect the greatest good, especially or reestablishing and maintaining the schools for the education of our rising generation. To sustain and promote education cannot much longer be neglected without inflicting a lasting injury to ourselves and our posterity." End quote. Tribal schools and churches were soon reopened. Because of the inevitable westward expansion, the Choctaw saw that they needed to change their tribal laws, which had been written for a pastoral society. They wanted laws that could better deal with the advances they believed were coming. They recognized that the railroads would bring more trade and mineral development. Many Choctaw citizens became active in tribal politics and elections. The tribe owned all of the Choctaw lands in common, although individuals owned their own homes and improvements, fences, wells, barns, on the land. The Choctaw could fence the surrounding fields and pastures as long as they didn't trespass on another's claimed area. Individuals could sell houses, barns, fences, and other improvements, but they could not sell the land. Many Choctaw, especially the full-bloods, lived in the country as farmers and cattlemen. Some white people coming into the area were employed as tenant farmers. A tenant farmer was a farmer who cleared the land and planted a crop, but who did not own the land. Tenant farmers usually received a share of the crop in payment. The mixed-blood Choctaw tended to live in towns where they owned trading stores or were in the coal, timber, or stone quarry businesses. Creek. The Civil War had further divided the Upper and Lower Creek. A new constitution written in 1867 aimed to unite the two factions, but differences continued to arise for several years afterward. Samuel Chicota, a full-blood Lower Creek, was elected chief in 1867. Differences over the disbursement of government payments and the defeat of Upper Creek Oktar Harzar's Harho, also called Sands, caused the Sands Rebellion of 1871. Harho and 300 followers occupied the capital at Okmulgee, but Creek light horsemen, tribal policemen, and federal agents soon defused the situation. Troops were called in again in 1881 when Upper Creek Isparhecher and his men skirmished with Chicota's party in what was called the Green Peach War. Isparhecher wanted to establish an independent government, but Chicota was successful in keeping the tribe together. Schools and churches were reopened in the Creek Nation. By 1896, there were 70 neighborhood schools, 6 boarding schools, a Creek orphans' home, as well as a boarding school and orphans' home for African-American Creek. Creek joined the other Indian people in rebuilding their homes and farms and rounding up their livestock. The people of the rebuilt tribal towns continued their tradition of getting together for celebrations, but the ancient ceremonials lost some of their status after the Civil War. Cherokee. Differences among the Cherokee tribal members were not completely erased by the Treaty of 1866, but they were stabilized. When Chief John Ross died a few weeks after the treaty was signed, his nephew, William Ross, was selected to fill the unexpired term. When Lewis Downing was elected principal chief in 1867, the United Tribe turned its attention to the common concern of dealing with the increasing pressure to open the territory to white settlement. All land in the Cherokee Nation was held in common, although individuals owned improvements. There were basically three classes of people in the tribe. The full-bloods generally had small farms and were poorer than were the mixed bloods. The third class of people included the white laborers who had to have permits to work in the nation. The Cherokee Nation had an excellent public school system that included seminaries, residential schools, an orphan asylum, a high school for blacks, and about 100 primary schools. The male seminary was located southwest of Tahlequah, and the female seminary was near Park Hill. On average, about 4,000 students attended the schools. The Cherokee began to prosper again by the 1880s. New towns sprang up. Markets grew in nearby states for Cherokee livestock, farm goods, timber, and stone. The leasing of rich grasslands brought revenue from cattlemen. Tahlequah became known as the center of culture and education in the Cherokee Nation. Freedmen. Although the 1866 treaties had specified that tribal rights and benefits be granted to freedmen, it was not always an easy process. A field office for the Freedmen's Bureau was set up in Fort Smith. The Bureau's mission was to assist with the transition from slave to freedman. A January 1866 report by John Sanborn, the commissioner of the Bureau, noted that freedmen were considered equals by the Creek and the Seminole. The Cherokee, Chickasaw, and Choctaw nations were divided in their feelings towards the African Americans. Segregation, separating groups by race, was common in the southern states after the Civil War. Indian Territory was no different. In addition to having separate schools, many all-black towns were established. All-black settlements provided safety, ready markets for crops, and economic assistance. Marshalltown, North Fork Town, Canadian Colored, and Arkansas Colored were some of the first all-black towns established in Indian Territory. Other all-black settlements were established later. Government schools. The U.S. government established Indian schools in the 1800s to help the Plains Indians and others assimilate, blend, into the American melting pot. These schools were in addition to the many neighborhood schools and academies the five tribes had established. Riverside Indian School, north of Anadarko at the Wichita Agency, was established in 1871 with 8 students. The next year, the school became the Wichita Caddo School, and it enrolled 40 students. Students from other tribes were added over the years. Still in operation, Riverside is the oldest federal government school for Indians. The U.S. government established Chilaco Indian School, Kay County, in 1884 to educate children of the Plains Indian tribes. A wagon train lumbered across the plains in January 1884, carrying tired and frightened Indian children to the boarding school. Jasper Hadley, the first superintendent, welcomed the students to their new school. Students studied academic subjects for half the day and vocational topics for the other half. Boys usually studied agriculture, while girls learned domestic jobs. the school eventually accepted any Indian child in the territory. By 1907, Chilaco had grown to 35 buildings, and from 1930 to 1959, the enrollment ranged from 800 to 1,200. Chilaco closed in 1980. Intended to transform American Indians, the school actually served to reinforce tribal identities. Missionaries continued to work with schools as well as to organize churches in the Indian Territory. Quakers, Methodists, Baptists, Mennonites, Dutch Reformed, Episcopalians, Presbyterians, and Catholics all worked tirelessly trying to convert the Indians. It's your turn. Number 1. Why were classes in the Chickasaw schools taught in English? Number 2. What was a tenant farmer? Number 3. What was a seminary?